You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Hello, I'm Andy Borowitz in for Leonard Lopate. And New York, New Jersey, that is one tough act to follow. But probably a lot of you are trying to make sense of what's going on right now with Governor Christie. And fortunately for us, our first guest is an expert in adolescent behavior. Parents of teenagers might think of adolescence as an emotional roller coaster marked by behaving impulsively and shutting out adults. But reckless behavior sounds familiar. Sneaking out of the house, taking mom's car without permission, or blowing off homework to hang out with friends might have less to do with teenage laziness, immaturity, and hormones, and more to do with normal brain development. Well, in his new book, Brainstorm, neuropsychiatrist Dr. Daniel J. Siegel debunks some of the myths about adolescent behavior and offers practical advice for teenagers and their parents on how to understand and cope with these changes. Dr. Siegel is a clinical professor of psychiatry at the UCLA School of Medicine and the executive director of the MindSight Institute. And I'm so pleased to welcome him to the show today. And for all of you listeners out there, we invite you to join the conversation. Call us with questions at 212-433-9692, or you can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter, and our handle there is at Leonard Lopate. We're not really going to be answering questions about Governor Christie, but we are going to be discussing reckless behavior and things like that. So some of our questions from listeners may apply. Now, one of the first myths that you confront in your book is that adolescence only lasts a short time. And we think of it as kind of the teenage years. In your findings, how long does adolescence actually last?
Well, you know, the new discoveries in the brain, Andy, have really revolutionized how we think about adolescence. So it lasts not just when the teen years end, but actually into at least the mid-20s. Mm-hmm. Some people say even longer. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the brain studies show that the remodeling of the brain actually continues on into your mid-20s, 24, 25 years of age.
Mm-hmm. And how recent is that research, and what have been the big breakthroughs in finding out about brain development?
Well, you know, 20 years ago, we just didn't have the technology to actually look beneath the skull and see how the brain is actually functioning. So it's around 15 years old, and these studies of longitudinally following kids as they grow up through the adolescent years is really in the last 10 years. So it's really new stuff that we're understanding that really changes our approach to adolescence and sees, in fact, that we've been living with a lot of myths that have misguided us and, in fact, in some ways imprisoned both adults and adolescents.
Well, you write in the book, and this is a direct quote, you say, how we navigate the adolescent years has a direct impact on how we'll live the rest of our lives. What do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean by that is that there are remodeling processes that go on. What that means is the brain is actually pruning itself. You're losing certain connections. And depending on what you do during your adolescent years can keep certain connections alive. Like if you like comedy, for example, like you do, for example, and your sense of humor. I'll bet when you were an adolescent, you probably kept that alive and going, and so it became a part of your life. If you love music, it's a good idea to keep music a part of your life, athletics, learning foreign languages. The brain before adolescence is really open to learning and developing itself, but adolescence is a period of really specializing where we prune away the things we're not using. It's a use it or lose it principle. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I mean by it sort of sets the stage. And also, it's a time of vulnerability so that the brain is very vulnerable to becoming addicted to, for example, activities or substances. And that can also lead to the way we live our life. And the final thing is there are positive aspects to adolescence. And if we hold on to this essence, you actually can live a more vital, fun, enjoyable life of connections with other people, connections to yourself. And it starts in adolescence.
When you talk about, about pruning and how your brain develops, is this why it's easier as an adolescent or as a child to, for example, learn an instrument or learn a language, and it's harder later in life?
That's exactly why. Think about it this way. You know, in childhood, you're like a sponge ready to soak in all the knowledge around you, and you have all these potentials. And we have certain proclivities, things we like, things we don't like, but we can do all sorts of things. Adolescence is a time of specialization. So, for example, if schools learn the lessons of this new brain science, we would say, let's teach kids before the end of adolescence musical instruments, how to sing. Let's have them do dancing, athletics. Let's learn foreign languages before this pruning process happens, when it's much harder to learn these things.
You know, you were saying somebody who is interested in comedy when they're a kid, and then I think in my case, I never really grew out of my adolescence. I'm still kind of there.
Well, that can be a very good thing. And I got to tell you, you not growing out of your adolescence makes me laugh many times a week.
Well, okay. Thank you. The adolescent in me still likes praise. But my question is, you know, I know people, other people who sort of pursue their passion that they had when they were kids. They were interested in the theater or music or sports, and then they're fortunate enough that the world allows them to continue to do this professionally. I note when I run into people like that that they have kind of a childlike quality about them.
Yes.
They seem more youthful or just playful, I guess is a word I would choose. Is there sort of brain science behind that? Is there it's not just some quirk of personality. It's like is there something happening to their brains that's different from, for example, compared to, say, somebody who says, well, enough of this electric guitar playing. I'm going to law school and I'm going to be serious now.
Yes, yes, there actually is. And in the Brainstorm book, I talk about the essence of adolescence, which has four components, and it actually spells the word essence. So ES is an emotional spark. You know, kids can have this sense of passion when they hit adolescence that if you hold on to it into adulthood, it's actually a very positive thing. The SE is social engagement, having relationships with others that are supportive and connecting, really, really important. Really get strong in adolescence as we push away from our parents, move toward our peers. But if you hold on to that adulthood, really great. N, novelty seeking. We know from studies of the brain that if you keep yourself trying out new things, thinking about things in new ways, you'll actually keep your brain growing. And the final part of essence, so emotional spark, social engagement, novelty, is CE, creative explorations. If you keep your mind challenged with new ways of thinking and viewing the world, the research on an area called neuroplasticity, how the brain changes response to experience, shows if you had to pick the top four factors that keep your brain young, literally young, just like you described it, it would be these four. The essence of adolescence is actually the essence of how to lead a life of vitality as an adult.
I'm Andy Borowitz in for Leonard Lopate, and I'm talking to Dr. Daniel J. Siegel about his new book, Brainstorm, The Power and Purpose of the Teenage Brain. And it's out now from Tarcher Penguin. We're on WNYC and WNYC.org. And to all of you listeners out there, some of whom might have adolescent children who can be in their 20s, I understand. They don't have to be teenagers. And you might have questions for Dr. Siegel. You can reach us at 212-433-9692, or you can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org, and we're also on Facebook and Twitter. Handle is at Leonard Lopate. Let's get to this question about keeping the brain, the good parts of the adolescent brain, kind of cooking into adulthood, because it seems to me that one reason why I didn't particularly have that eliminated in my case, because I was the youngest in our family, and my parents were kind of tired of parenting, so they did almost no parenting, and so yeah. I was allowed to roam free and did a lot of dangerous things as a result. Mm-hmm. But I think I benefited to a certain extent from allowing to explore my teenage brain, and I wasn't told to be serious and to think about. Well, I was told to think about law school later, but that's another issue. But as parents, we're sometimes told, you know, that we have to clamp down on our kids and make sure, watch them like a hawk, and make sure that they're safe and doing good things, that they're applying themselves in school, and that they're putting together good high school transcripts, so they go to a good college. Are we doing some damage to that playful side of the brain, that aspect of the teenage brain or the adolescent brain that you are positive about, that you're happy about?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. I wrote the Brainstorm book for an adolescent to read to address this exact issue, and also for adults to read too, to have one book for both sides of the generation. And what I would like to encourage people to think about is that this essence of being playful, for example, of exploring new things, of having a passion, is something that can be squashed by not just parents, but by teachers, by schools, by the society. And what I hope the change in the cultural conversation can be with us discussing these ideas, this in the Brainstorm approach, is to say, look, you know, this essence of adolescence is actually something that not only can help the individual move away from home and go out into the world as an independent, resilient person, but also for our society, there's a huge amount of courage and creativity in the adolescent generation that is just being glossed over by our approach in schools now, our approach in society. We see the adolescent period is a time of immaturity. We see it as something you just have to get through, or it's raging hormones. But in fact, we can change the way we see this by our new understanding from the science of adolescence and actually tap into the courage and creativity and playfulness that we can actually support. And if we do that with the adolescent group, I think society will benefit because we're going to come up with all sorts of new approaches to solving difficult problems. And the individuals will benefit because they can hold on to the essence as they move into adulthood and maintain a sense of vitality, youth, and vigor.
I'm speaking with Dr. Dan Siegel about what goes on inside a teenager's brain, or adolescent's brain, because it's not a teenager by no stretch.
Right.
His book, Brainstorm, The Power and Purpose of the Teenage Brain, is published by Tarcher, and we'll be back with more after a break. Hello, everybody. I'm Andy Borowitz, in for Leonard Lopate, and I'm talking to Daniel J. Siegel, the author of Brainstorm, The Power and Purpose of the Teenage Brain. And we're looking for your calls. Any questions you have about the adolescent brain and brain development, we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. And let's see if my adolescent technical skills can put up this call correctly. Let's just check this out. Hello? Oh, yeah. Hi. Is this Lindsay?
Yeah.
How are you doing? It's Andy.
Good. How are you?
I'm here with Dr. Siegel. Do you have a question for him?
I do. You guys were talking about how the adolescent brain persists into the 20s. I was wondering if you knew what happens in the 20s to make the adolescent brain stop persisting, because that would be interesting to, I mean, would be an interesting drug target to manipulate and maybe have the adolescent brain persist longer.
Mm-hmm. You know, Lindsay, that is a fantastic question. And the first thing to say from science is that the reason we say it lasts into the mid-20s is because of these brain scans we can now see where the remodeling of the brain continues well into the 20s. The reason it stops doing that, we just don't know. So we don't know if it's cultural pressure, if it's the general 24, 25-year-old assuming responsibilities, so their experiences are shaping the end of this remodeling period. It's a great question, and scientists just don't have the answer yet. Now, your question about is there some way of developing a process that keeps this remodeling open, I think there's a lot of studies to show that, in fact, what you do with your mind, how you focus your attention in an open kind of way, whether you do that by being out in a garden and just being present with the garden or learning different kinds of, for example, meditation or finding a way to be what's called mindful, there are some hints, in fact, that if you learn to focus your attention that way, you don't need a drug, but you can develop a mind process, this focusing of attention openly, that actually keeps your brain young. So being present for life, for what's happening as it's happening, without being swept up by judgments, is one way in which you can actually keep your mind young and your brain continuing to grow throughout the lifespan.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
I do like that Lindsay suggested that there might be a drug people could take in their 20s to make them behave in a more adolescent way. I do believe such drugs are available, but yeah. we don't really need to specify them.
I don't think they've studied them yet.
No. Although some may be about to be legal in New York, according to Governor Cuomo, but we'll talk about that later. I noticed on Twitter that Jason has asked, this is an interesting question. He says, does lack of perspective go both ways? Some teens dwell on consequences and are worried sick about grades and risks, you know, so that there are some kids have this kind of devil may care attitude, but there are other kids who are incredibly intensely anxious about all this stuff.
Yeah, well, Jason, that is a really important point. And as I've gone around to schools now, talking about this whole brainstorm stuff, you get a feeling from the kids who are in those meetings that they are incredibly stressed. They do worry about the future. They worry about their ability to get a job. They worry about what schools are going to get into, what grades they're going to get. And the teachers sometimes say, we don't want to generate the pressure. And even the parents say they don't want to generate the pressure. So I think you're right. It can go both ways. I think what's happening here is that people are locking on to something very specific, like what grade am I going to get? What SAT score am I going to get? What college I go to? Because the world is so filled with intense uncertainty. And with that uncertainty, people get nervous and they lock onto something they think they can do something about. And what I talk about in the Brainstorm book is how you can actually approach this in a different way and realize you can generate an internal source of strength that can reduce that stress, can clarify what has meaning, allow you to follow your passions. And hopefully we can actually give kids who are generating that during their adolescence a sense of relief and a sense of purpose in their lives.
You mentioned in that answer these brainstorm meetings. What are they all about?
Well, sometimes they're meeting in schools where I'll meet with the students of the schools, I'll meet with the teachers of the schools, and I'll meet with the parents of the schools where we're all talking about how do we change the conversation about adolescence. Sometimes it's at, you know, meditation societies, and sometimes it's, you know, like tonight in New York, or sometimes it's, you know, at large town meetings in Seattle and San Francisco is meeting just large town meetings. Because the idea is this, if we change the cultural attitude toward adolescence, it can be a win-win-win situation. The adolescents involved can have less stress and be treated with more respect. The adults involved can actually learn to regain their adolescence, in many ways, this essence, to make their lives young. And for our larger society, for us as a human family, I believe very deeply that the science is pointing to the idea that we are a creative species because of adolescence. As you probably know, innovation in technology, science, art, and music comes from adolescent minds. Mm-hmm. And yet we as a society are not tapping into that incredible source of wisdom and strength and courage and creativity. If we change our cultural conversation, I think a huge potential for positive change is possible.
Okay, we have another caller. This is Kenneth. Hello.
Hi. Are you there?
Hello? Yeah, we're here. Hi, Kenneth.
Oh, hi. Mike, I have a two-part question. One, I was wondering if you were or have been the parent of an adolescent. And two, I agree with everything you're saying as to all the attributes that adolescents have. But as a parent, I have a daughter who's 11 and about to be 12, and I want to be able to cultivate all the things you're talking about. But I'm not sure. I'm also very frightened about what's about to happen, considering the amazing gifts that adolescents have for being provocative and difficult, especially with their parents. So I neither want to be squashed by her, nor do I want to squash her. I wanted to get any thoughts about that. I'll take my answer off on the air.
Thanks, Kenneth.
I see. Kenneth, thank you so much. First of all, I have in my family one daughter who's about to turn 20 and one son who's 24. So they're still adolescents. So we've been through that. I'm also a child and adolescent psychiatrist, and I've been practicing as a psychiatrist for 30 years. So I've seen a lot of adolescents over the years. And in those two areas, my professional life and my personal life, what I found was that the things available for parents and for adolescents were not really addressing these issues. And the reason I wrote the book was for someone exactly like you and your daughter, because the book is written so that your daughter, as an 11, almost 12-year-old, can read it, and you can read it, so that if you really find these ideas valuable of looking at the positive aspects of adolescence, of nurturing this essence, this will actually give you exercises within the book of how to do that. So your concern, how can I not squash it? How can I support her? I would love to hear from you if you'd take a look at the book and let me know if it's been helpful for you as you go through it, because there are specific practical ways of taking the science and finding a way to nurture not only your daughter's development, but also your role as a parent to support her development and even your own.
Maria in Morningside Heights asks if you can address, this is a great question, the 3 to 4 hours of homework they're now given in high schools. You know, on a personal note, my son's high school, he graduated last year. There was awful lot of pressure on kids, you know, drug issues, lots of anxiety issues among the kids. And they showed this film to parents called The Race to Nowhere, yes, which is all about the pressure put on kids. However, when I contacted the school and said, that's a great movie, how about having less homework at the school? I got a very frosty reply. So they were big on showing the film. They weren't so big on changing their policy. Mm-hmm. Why is there so much homework? I don't understand.
Oh my gosh, Andy, as you can hear, I have kids just a little older than yours. I always ask that question to myself and to the teachers. And the last I looked at the homework research was to show that you actually don't get that much of a value of that many hours of homework. You know, some people say, well, let's do it so it keeps the kids out of trouble. What I'm finding is the kids are so scheduled that with that amount of homework that they don't get enough sleep. And with sleep deprivation, they can't concentrate. They can't remember. They get irritable. They actually have insulin changes, so they're more prone to gaining weight. And a whole cycle of negative things happen. And so that much homework without research showing it's actually useful really needs to be addressed. And I think there needs to be a national look at that, because it's not just your experience and mine, but it's actually a universal experience. And that kind of stress is really unhelpful for the pruning process that happens in the brain, because it challenges the pruning, and some people think it actually makes it worse. So stress in adolescence isn't just something that makes you irritable. It can actually change the course of your development, and I think we should have a view of changing this homework approach. Now, of course, the schools do it. When you ask why do they do it, because they're afraid that colleges, without the kind of hard classes they have,
right,
won't accept their kids, right, and then their schools won't get the kids they want, et cetera, et cetera. So it turns into this cycle that we need to look at as a whole system.
And in addition to the homework being too onerous, I have no idea why kids are forced to go to high school as early in the morning as they are. That
exactly
doesn't make sense to me either.
You know, some studies say there's a delay in release of melatonin, so that adolescents are sort of built to stay up later. And one of the theories is in the old days in our villages, they're the ones who would have been on guard at night.
I see.
Watching us. And
well, in a sense,
us.
They still are. But
they
just,
still are. That's right.
They're just doing something different.
They're informal guards. So, you know, it doesn't make sense, because kids do need about 8 to 9 hours of sleep.
Right.
But if you do the math, especially with these screens that are keeping their brains awake, that's a whole other topic, you know, the digital world. But with the screens that keep them awake and they're staying up late, they're getting up early for an 8 a.m. class, they're just sleep deprived. And sleep deprivation, if we could solve one problem, if we could aim on that, to focus on that one, we'd be actually making a lot of good in the world.
I'm talking to Daniel J. Siegel. He is the author of Brainstorm, The Power and Purpose of the Teenage Brain. We're talking all about adolescent behavior, the adolescent brain. We're taking your phone calls at 212-433-9692. We're getting a lot of interesting calls. Let's take one right now. 1 second. Let's see how this goes. Okay. The caller is Andrea.
Hi.
Here we go.
So I have twin girls who are 16 years old. They are fraternal twins. One of them is extremely high achieving. She took her SATs for the first time in December. And she's in 11th grade. And she gets amazing grades. She's very, very motivated, and her twin sister is motivated in a different way. She loves art. She can sit down and draw magnificent paintings and magnificent drawings with a pencil, with acrylic. But I would like to see them be a little bit more balanced, where the one who is incredibly motivated become a little more playful and a little more relaxed, and the one who's very creative become a little more motivated.
Okay. I think what you just described is the plot of the Patty Duke show, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Kind of, except that they were identical.
That's true. That's
identical
true.
Cousins.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Andrea, this is a wonderful question on so many levels. First of all, thank you for sharing about your experience with your daughters. As fraternal twins, you know, they're basically just like siblings. And so it's the same for just if you had kids different ages. But the importance here is to say that we come into the world with a temperament, which is an innate way our nervous system has tendencies to behave and ways it tends to function. And so you can see in your two girls, you know, they're very different, even though they're raised in the same family. And temperament is very important. Genetics are very important. I think the first thing to say is that your daughters finding a passion in what they love, for one, it's drawing, for the other, it's academics, they really need to be honored for that and to allow that kind of creativity, whether it's academic creativity or artistic creativity, to be respected and to allow that to flourish. When you say you want them to be more balanced, You know, as siblings, of course, there's sibling rivalry, and sometimes siblings actually differentiate and become more extreme just to clarify their difference from the other. And so that could be something you could discuss with the two of them, and that may not actually start to ease up until they're out of the house and on their own, not living in the same home. But you might want to just talk to them about that. And I would be sure the crucial thing from the research is that the way you as a parent support who each daughter is really what's important. To take your expectations that they should be this way or should be that way and take a deep breath, let that go, and allow them to just be who they are and allow them to become who they are. So that would be some inner work for yourself. And in the Brainstorm book, there's all sorts of things about attachment relationships and how to be present for how they go through things that I think for you as a parent reading it would be very relevant to this question you have. And it sounds like you're really doing a great job supporting them because they're becoming differentiated people and doing what they do well.
Totally differentiated.
Yeah. Well, enjoy them.
That's it. Yeah. I do. They're amazing kids.
Well, it's great that you have each other. That's beautiful.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks, Andrea. Let's take a call from Robin in Harlem.
Hi. I have two questions. What is the difference in the adolescent brain as it changes over time between girls and boys? So that's one question. The second question is a little more specific. My 14-year-old is... his biggest passion right now, I would say, is video games. And we have limits on how much time he can spend. It's a little different on a school night versus a weekend. But I'm concerned that the plasticity of his brain is going to shape itself around this kind of entertainment and stimulus that I find sometimes sort of horrifying. And then I guess a subsidiary question to that, and then I'll take the answer off the air, is... how much should I push him on homework, and how much should I just let him sort out for himself the discipline and the focus that he needs to bring to that work? Thank you.
Wow, you know, those are really terrific questions. Let me start with the first one. The general issue of male versus female brains is a really interesting one in the science. In the popular literature, you hear a lot said about the male brain, the female brain. But actually, when you look at the science, the thing to know is if you put a person in a scanner and took an image of their brain, there is no way for a scientist to know if that brain were male or female. And that's related to the issue that the male brain and the female brain are much more similar than they are different. Now, of course, there are general differences in males and females. And in the center that I helped co-run at UCLA, we study how culture influences brain development. So we need to always ask the question, what are the cultural expectations for masculinity and femininity? And how is that kind of communication being transmitted to how people behave? So in terms of your specific question, male, female, and adolescent development, there is a difference in the timing of the pruning and what's called myelination, which is how the neurons that remain are connected to each other. And what's fascinating about that is there's a bit of an earlier maturation for females than males. But ultimately, in the end, the scientists are stating very clearly they end up essentially at the same place. So the timing may be different, but the process overall is very, very similar. Now, of course, with differences in hormones, there's differences in male behavior, female behavior, you know, with aggression, with testosterone, all sorts of things. And that's a different sort of issue. Your next question was about your son and video games. And the subsidiary was, you know, what you do with him with homework. You know, one of my colleagues at UCLA actually studies video games and shows that for certain games, they're actually helpful in learning to have motor skills, visual motor skills. And some studies of surgeons even show that the surgeons that play video games are better at their surgical procedures. So, you know, maybe your son wants to be a surgeon. I don't know. But we shouldn't just put them down is my point. Now, the issue I'm more concerned about is how you balance out the different things that go on in life. And if he's only playing video games and not having face-to-face interaction with other kids, if he's not doing other things with his body besides moving his right or left hand, you know, to move the mouse in the game, you know, this isn't good for his body. It isn't good for his brain. It isn't good for his mind. It isn't good for his relationships. So you want to have a balance of things. In the end of the book, I talk about these MindSight things you can do. With David Rock, I put together something called the Healthy Mind Platter. If you take a look at that, you'll see the general things on a daily basis we all should be doing. And, you know, having some video game during that is fine if he's, you know, doing what he needs to do. And in terms of the homework question, you know, that's a big question. I always feel that it's important for especially adolescents to find their own motivation. And rather than being stuck with the feeling of, oh, my mother's telling me to do it, for him to see that if he doesn't do it, he gets these bad marks, he doesn't achieve what he wants to achieve, and for him to learn to have that internal motivation so he can have an internal compass that drives his behavior from the inside out.
Dan, just so you know, I I let my son play Xbox because that ensures that there will be an Xbox in the house for me to play. So that, right. That was my philosophy. Yeah. This has been really great, and our calls were great. I've been speaking with Dr. Dan Siegel about, excuse me, what goes on inside a teenager's brain. His book, Brainstorm, The Power and the Purpose of the Teenage Brain, is published by Tarcher, and he will be speaking and signing books tonight at 7 at the New York Insight Meditation Center. That's at 28 West 27th Street. For more information, visit our show page. Dan, thanks for joining us today.
Andy, it's a pleasure.